I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. Good to have you with us. Okay, so what's going on today? Every now and then, to get a sense of what is happening in other parts of the world, it's good to begin with a close look at something right under our noses, like here in the U.S. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to visit Miami and take a look at a trend that is just starting to take hold there. It also seems to be happening in other places. I'm talking about people on the coast moving away from rising seas to higher ground inland and pushing out the people who already live there. The World's Livable Planet reporter Carolyn Beeler begins in the Miami neighborhood of Little Haiti.
Schiller Sanan Jules is wearing dark aviator sunglasses and looking down the pastel-colored storefronts of Little Haiti's Main Street.
Have you ever seen the marketplace there?
This Miami neighborhood drew him in when the local businessman was a kid in the 80s.
I remember we came down here to get fried pork, fried plantains. It was a taste of Haiti.
As a teenager, he and his friends would grab drums and parade down this very street in a kind of Haitian second line.
Every Saturday night, this is where you'd find us. Sometimes we'd be out for 2-3 hours just walking, and there'd be like 100 people following the band, you know, so we had fun.
But Sanan Jules says the neighborhood is changing. Developers are buying up property and pushing out longtime residents.
It's not the same as it used to be before, because you don't have the Haitian influx that you used to have.
Gentrification is as old as cities themselves. Marginalized communities get priced out of neighborhoods as more affluent residents move in. The trend is driven by a lot of factors, but in Miami, some people are pointing to a new one, climate change. Closer to the beach, rising seas regularly cause water to push up through the ground during high tides. Flooding is more and more of a problem. But the spot where Sanan Jules is standing is some of the highest ground around, about 11 feet above sea level. So some residents of Little Haiti believe investors see their neighborhood as a safer bet and are buying up land.
For sure. I think that 100%.
Lydia Toussaint lives around here. I met up with her as she was walking out of a Haitian bakery with a fried fish patty in hand. She says the idea of climate gentrification hit home after Hurricane Irma made rivers out of roads in some parts of Miami in September.
We didn't really experience flooding. We really just got some down power lines. I was having this conversation with a friend about how this changes the market, you know, in this area. It makes it more valuable. So now we're going to definitely get pushed out of here.
So do you think that's already happening?
Oh, yes.
Toussaint's parents have lived here 40 years, but are now looking at leaving.
They're older, they're retired, so their income is restricted, so they can't afford it. So now they're going to have to try to find something they can afford, but it's becoming harder and harder.
The term climate gentrification bubbled up here a few years ago and has gained traction, mostly among activists and journalists like me, who wonder if it's really a thing. Valencia Gunder definitely thinks it is.
What we're seeing is Little Haiti is going to be completely wiped out in the next maybe 5 to 10 years.
Gunder is a powerhouse community activist in the area, and she believes three big developments going in nearby are partly because of developers fleeing high water. And she says that's a big reversal here.
In Miami, historically, because of racism, redlining, and segregation, all of the brown and black people were forced to live in the center of the city, which also happens to be the high elevated areas. So they pushed us here because they didn't want us on the beach.
But today, the future does not look so good for that beach. Rising seas could put most of South Florida's coastal areas underwater by the end of the century. Nationwide, new research shows homes at risk from sea level rise are starting to lose value. And there's anecdotal evidence that in Miami, even renters are thinking about flooding.
So I live on the second floor in my apartment block, and that's a conscious decision.
Charles Bradley's apartment is in Miami's South Beach neighborhood.
You just see puddles appear, and it can be like the hottest day in July. And, you know, it's not come from the sky, it's coming out the ground.
One day, Bradley couldn't drive to soccer practice through the flooded streets.
I literally had to float my car across the gutter to get into my car lot because the water was just insane.
But it's not like people have stopped building on the waterfront. Brickell is one neighborhood just south of downtown where the streets flooded during Hurricane Irma. Today, it's busy with jackhammers and cranes building towering new condo buildings in every direction. The population of this area has nearly tripled since 2000. So if the real estate market is still hot everywhere in Miami, are activists and residents just wrong about the impact of rising seas? Harvard professor Jesse Keenan says it's complicated.
Across Miami-Dade County, the higher elevation you are, the faster the rate of price appreciation across the entire county.
Keenan says there's a correlation between elevation and how much property values are going up. But that doesn't mean fear of rising sea levels is causing that increase. And Keenan doesn't think it is, at least very much.
We actually think that that is probably natural land pricing pressures that come from good old-fashioned gentrification.
Miami's beachfront has been expensive and built up for a long time, so new development is moving inland. Still, Keenan says that doesn't mean the activists worried about climate gentrification are totally wrong. He's had conversations with Miami developers and investors who say climate change is influencing their decisions. So it's just a matter of time before that starts impacting prices.
If it's not happening now, it's going to happen. 10 years, 15 years, who knows? But it's going to happen much sooner than later.
Keenan says the important question is what Miami officials plan to do about it. One of those officials is Jane Gilbert, the city's chief resilience officer. I asked her if the city has a plan for retaining affordable housing inland, even if people start to flee the beach. The short answer, not yet. The city's current priority is the coastline.
We've got a huge amount of built-out infrastructure along our coast. It's some of our most valuable real estate.
Gilbert's team is looking at what Miami can do to keep people living there through 2060 with something like 2 to 3 feet of sea level rise.
We feel that we can probably manage that without significant migration away from our coast.
Gilbert is considering ways to increase affordable housing citywide, but looking at high elevation areas specifically, that'll come later.
Right now, it's often hard for cities to plan beyond election cycle, so we're trying to work beyond the 20 to 40 year cycle, which is its own level of challenge. To plan out to 2100 is not something cities usually do.
By that date, it's possible people won't just be moving a few blocks inland. Recent research estimated more than 2.5 million people might move out of the Miami area entirely by the end of the century due to sea level rise. If that's the case, climate gentrification may not be a little Hades problem at all, but Orlando's or Austin's.
Lock up the store here so we can take a little walk.
For little Haiti businessman Schiller Sanan Jules, gentrification has already taken its toll. He's closing his Haitian gift shop at the end of the year because his landlord doubled the rent. For The World, Carolyn Beeler, Miami.
That research Carolyn mentioned at the end of her story about people decamping from South Florida, it was published in the journal Nature last spring, and it estimated that as many as 2.5 million people may leave the region if sea levels rise 6 feet, which could very well happen. Matt Hauer did that research. He's a demographer at the University of Georgia, and he predicts that several U.S. cities are likely to lose population due to rising seas.
I found places like Orlando and Atlanta and Dallas and Austin, these sort of southern cities that are relatively close to the coastline, or at least closer than, say, Detroit would be, that are also people are already moving from coastal communities into those areas and vice versa, and that have pretty strong economies.
So when I think about population shifts in the U.S., I think about the Great Migration decades ago and more recently people moving to the Sun Belt. How would migration caused by rising seas compare to those big migration shifts in size?
With sea level rise, without any kind of adaptive measures in coastal communities, we're looking at a migration that would be of a similar magnitude as the Great Migration.
Wow. What kind of population increases are we actually talking about at some of these places inland?
So places like Austin could see upwards of 800,000 additional people. Orlando and Atlanta could both see over 300,000. Phoenix could see over 100,000. Places like New Orleans could lose 500,000 people, and Miami could lose 2.5 million as well. So in some cases, we're looking at really large flows of people, and others we're looking at sort of smaller amounts of flows.
Surely with numbers like 800,000, that's going to cause some kind of tension in those communities.
I mean, I think there's that possibility if we don't properly plan for it. Yeah. And this is just one climate change effect, which would be sea level rise, where the signal for migration is relatively clear. Whereas when you start factoring in extreme heat, extreme drought, tropical cyclones, a number of other climate stressors, there could be even more people moving.
Mm-hmm. Do you think places like Austin and Orlando are kind of ready to absorb all these climate refugees?
Well, I don't know if they're ready or not, but they should definitely start preparing and thinking about how to plan for this incoming wave of migrants. Absolutely.
And now, in the wake of Hurricane Maria, we're seeing 250,000 Puerto Ricans arriving in Florida, literally changing the demographics of the state. So I suspect you don't just see this as an interesting academic exercise for what might happen decades from now. Does the current news make you believe that your predictions are accurate?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, that's one of the things with when you do these kind of long range models, you're never quite sure exactly what is going to happen. And the good thing is that without putting my thumb on the scale, I ended up recreating results the literature strongly suggests. And then when you start seeing the effect of Maria in Puerto Rico and where Puerto Ricans are moving to right now, it just adds further credence to what I was doing, further weight.
So your research focuses on the U.S., but what can you tell us about how sea level rise is likely to impact migration globally?
Well, we know in terms of climate migration, the working hypothesis right now is that most of that migration will be within countries if people are going to move. So not as much cross-border migration, as at least that's the current working hypothesis, than you would think that there would be. But across the world, it's somewhere between 150 million and 200 million people could be on the move because of sea level rise in particular.
Wow.
So
200 million people just from sea level rise.
Yeah. So we're talking about the potential for very large flows of people.
So the conclusion is that when we plan for sea level rise, we need to think not just about the coast, but also look inland. Is that for you like the big takeaway?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely it. We think about sea level rise as this coastal challenge, but if people move because of sea level rise, they have to move somewhere. And some are going to relocate within coastal communities, you know, a nearby area that might be unaffected. And other people are going to move landward into these landlocked communities. And if we don't start thinking now about incorporating these migration flows into long-term strategic planning, we have the serious potential of being woefully unprepared for what the future is going to hold.
Matt Hauer at the University of Georgia, thank you very much.
Thanks. It was great talking with you.